Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
After yet another turbulent week across the Atlantic, we are joined now by former Speaker of the US House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi. After decades at the top of American politics, Pelosi is the person widely credited as having made the decisive intervention last month, which led to her friend Joe Biden's withdrawal from the presidential election. Her new book, The Art of Power, is a detailed look at what it is like to be in the room enacting change during crucial events. It touches too on her relationship with various presidents, including Donald Trump, the attack on her husband Paul, and the events of January 6th. Nancy Pelosi, you are very, very welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be with you, an honour as well.
Nancy Pelosi, the last few months in American politics have been an incredible whirlwind, from an assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump to the exit of President Joe Biden from the presidential race to the entrance of J.D. Vance. Tell me, how are you feeling now about the Kamala Harris-Tim Walz presidential ticket?
I'm feeling very optimistic about it because she is so wonderful and so is he. She happens to be a woman, and that's going to be very special for us, but she's the best candidate to win the White House for the Democrats, for the American people, in my case, always for the children. Tim Walz, I know him well. He served in Congress for 12 years. He was a champion for Americans' veterans as the top Democrat on the Veterans Affairs Committee, elected by his colleagues, who have great esteem, held him in great esteem. So we have a great ticket, and it's a big difference in vision between the two campaigns and the two candidates. And what's exciting about it is that there's so much enthusiasm for it. Volunteers and all small donor contributors and the rest.
There seems to be a lot of joy and a lot of dollars heading into those campaigns too. Tell me, Nancy Pelosi, do you think that the US is finally ready for a female president who, of course, is a woman of color also?
I think so. Yes, I do. And we're going to make it so. Winning an election is a decision. You make a decision to win, and then you make every decision in favor of winning. How you mobilize at the grassroots level to own the ground, how you message with boldness and progressiveness, but not with menacing. Messaging and the money to get it done, and the small donors are just raging as they are sending in support for Kamala Harris.
Tell me this, because speaking about messaging, in your book, you say a successful speaker must know what all of the possibilities are all of the time. And you have these mantras: know your power, know when to use it, know your why. And I'm just wondering, given the power that you wield and the respect that you command, you must have known when you said it was up to President Biden whether he was going to run after he had said he was firmly committed to remaining in the race. Did you know that those remarks were going to be as game-changing as they have been?
Well, it would have been up to the president. I really, with all due respect, like to talk about as we go forward. I'm a great fan of the president. He is a very consequential president. He did more in the 2 years, his first 2 years with Democrats in the majority, than any president in modern time, whether it was the American Rescue Plan, whether it was the infrastructure bill, whether it was saving our planet with the IRA, as well as reducing the cost of prescription drugs in the same bill, whether it was CHIPS and science, whether it was to take us into the future, whether it's the PACT Act honoring the service of our veterans and meeting their needs if they were exposed to burn pits. So, and the list goes on, but it's not just that. It's what that leads to, what's next.
It is, of course, about what is next. But it was really interesting because The New Yorker said that your message delivery was arguably as essential to President Biden's decision to stand aside at the moment as during the Watergate scandal, when three Republican congressional members went to the White House to make it plain to Richard Nixon that he had lost support on the Hill. Do you think that history will look back at your own contribution and say you did the right thing at the right time?
I don't know what they said in that interview about Nixon, but this has nothing to do with that. This is not about going to a president who is in violation of the law. This is about going. This is about a president who has a tremendous, historic, consequential legacy for us to protect for the people, for him, but for the people. So he would make the decision as to how, looking at the facts and the rest, how we would go forward. It was his decision. And again, that's all I'm going to say about it, because we, you know, one of these days, everybody will have their say about what they did, said, or whatever it is, and what they took from what I said that day. I was actually saying, stop saying things publicly while NATO is in process. This was during the NATO visit. Purpose of my going on the show was to bring Svetlana, talk about Belarus. She's the courageous leader of the anti-establishment in Belarus. And that was our purpose. When they asked that, I said, I'm calling upon people not to make statements. People were saying, I don't think you should, I don't think you should. I said, what are you saying that for while he's here? It's up to him to make the decision.
Before I go on to ask you about other aspects of the book, have you spoken to him since he has stepped down and after 40 years?
No, I haven't. But it would not be, no, it wouldn't be unusual that I would not speak to him. I'm not the leader anymore. So we would speak regularly about legislation, our strategy, and this or that. I'm not the leader, I'm not the speaker, so we wouldn't have the same level of conversation. But this would be normal distance in terms of speaking and the rest. I love him. I think he's the best. We have three generations, my husband and I, Paul and I, my children, our five children, our grandchildren, they all love Joe Biden.
Can I speak to you, Nancy Pelosi, just about your husband, Paul? There were two really compelling chapters in the book that really, I suppose, bookended it. It began with an act of political violence, and you also spoke about the January 6th attacks. You say that your home remains a heartbreaking crime scene after the near-fatal attack on your husband, Paul. Can you tell us about the trauma that has left on you and your family, and how he's doing now?
You're nice to ask. Thank you. He's coming along fine, making progress all along. Terrible for me because the person was after me, came into my house, into our house, into our home, into our bedroom. Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy? Very familiar from January 6th when they came into the Capitol. Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy? What was sad about it was, of course, the physical injury. Very dangerous, a centimeter, as I learned when the doctor testified in court, from being fatal, could have been fatal, would have been, well, God bless us, he's with us. What was awful about it was the former president, his family, and Republican governor and others making a joke of it, making a joke of somebody being physically assaulted.
Yeah.
And then, but so that's where a lot of the trauma sets in. You have trauma because of the attack. But the fact that they would do that, and people would laugh, and they liked it on social media. And so, but hundreds of thousands of people sent their messages of goodwill by their groups or by individually, prayers, thoughtfulness, kindness, that dispelled a lot of that. We never told Dad about the other stuff. But the kids saw it because they did. And it was pretty traumatic, as was January 6th. Traumatic to the staff. Those of us who run for office know that there's a challenge. But the young people come to Capitol Hill, on both sides of the aisle, to learn more, to contribute. Their youth, their enthusiasm, their optimism for the future. For them to have to hide under desks silently in the dark for hours because people were pounding on the doors with a violence in mind. Where is Nancy? We're going to shoot her in the head. Where's the vice president? We have a gallows for him, really, a noose for him. And the president of the United States, who instigated an insurrection against our Congress, our Constitution, and the Capitol of the United States, refusing to send the National Guard. Even though he had bipartisan appeal for that.
Your account of the attacks and on the Capitol, and I know what your daughter actually captured, unusually was able to capture a lot of what was happening. But it made me think, you know, that people, you know, will say, well, look, you're a politician, you're an elected official. You've had to withstand many slings and arrows in public life. And in a sense, because of the seniority that you have held, you are a constant target, even still. But did you ever in your political career see those types of attacks, both on your husband, Paul, and the sanctity of your family home and the Capitol? Did you have any sense that something like that was going to come in your lifetime?
Well, I didn't think that the President of the United States would incite an insurrection on the Capitol of the United States, encouraging people to use violence to go in there to prevent the Vice President from honoring his constitutional responsibility. I never thought we would see the day when, under Lincoln's Dome, which Lincoln built, we would see the Confederate flag and all of that horrible assault on our country. Our founders had this beautiful vision. It could not be honored completely in our Constitution, but they put in a process of amendment so that we could ever expand freedom. Lincoln held us together, building that dome during the Civil War to show America's resilience. And now the times had found us. Thomas Paine said the times had found us during the Revolution. Now the times have found us to save our democracy. And Alexandra was there to show her sons the peaceful transfer of power. That's why she was there with her sons, because this was historic. It was the day that we were to certify the results of the Electoral College.
And she captured Nancy Pelosi. Something else which was absolutely extraordinary. People listening here, you know, we've seen political attacks against politicians all over the world. What would you say to others who aspire to hold public office, especially women who are targeted in a particular way, particularly online as well as in real life?
Well, I appreciate that question, because apart from what happened on January 6th and in our home in October of 2 years ago, there has been a concern of women in politics about not physical violence, but assaults on their character. So when I've been a target for a long time, I say, because I'm effective, I pass laws, I raise money, I win elections, and that's why I'm a target. But they say to me, we could never take that kind of abuse. Our children, we can't have them coming home from school crying because somebody in school saw an ad on TV that questioned their mom's integrity. So that has to go. What do you believe? What do you think the role of government is? Let's have that discussion. If you're bankrupt of ideas about how to help the American people and you have to resort to this kind of throwing mud, shame on you. But the fact is that it's out there. And they like to go after women in a particular way because they like to undermine their integrity, because people think women are more highly ethical. They just do. So what do? We try to go after that and just make up something, put it on TV. Somebody sees it. They hear it at home. The child goes to school, says something to the candidate's child. It's very unhealthy.
Nancy Pelosi,
but I say to them, you have to know your why. If you know why you're doing this, then it makes the slings and arrows bearable.
Moving from women and their why, I want to ask you about men, and one man in particular, because in The Art of Power, which is an incredible, it's not really a memoir as such, it's all of these huge, big consequential challenges you've been involved in. But you say that whilst your legislative career had many facets, which it has, of course, you are still amazed by how many people you meet who ask you about only one topic, and that topic is Donald Trump.
Well, let me just say, it's not that I said ask, but that's what they're saying is, I'm saying we pass the Affordable Care Act with 20 million people or more having access to health, 150 million people with a pre-existing condition now no longer prevented from having, you know, all that. And what do they want to know? Thank you for tearing up the speech. Thank you for applauding the way you did. Thank you for pointing your finger at him in the room. Thank you for stomping out of his office. And it's like, well, wait a minute, I'm a legislator. This was accomplishments for the American people. But they said, no, when you did those things, you spoke for me. And I'm like, well, how about if I got you health care? Wouldn't that be a good thing, too? So that's what I meant by that. They weren't asking about him. They know about him.
They know.
Even though I framed it that way, my fault. But the fact is they were thanking me for speaking for them in terms of what he had to say. Yeah, it's interesting. My staying in Congress was to be here to make sure that he never sets foot in the White House again.
Can I ask you, look, the atmosphere and rhetoric, not just in U.S. politics, but it's right across the globe, but particularly in U.S. politics, is as divisive, arguably, as it is dangerous. What do you say to people who say, well, look, some Democrats compared Donald Trump to Adolf Hitler and in the run-up to the assassination attempt on his life. And, you know, what do you say to people who say, well, that might have contributed, even unwittingly, to such an attack? Because the attack on the former president, whatever you think about him, was in its own way an attack on democracy in the U.S.
Well, I think it was awful. I think it was a horrible thing. And thank God the president came out of it apparently uninjured. But I don't think that what you're saying has any equivalence, with all due respect. We don't have any idea what the motivation of that young person was or his sanity level or anything else. But comparing the tactics of Donald Trump to Mussolini and Hitler is a very legitimate thing if you look at what they did. To delegitimize the press. If you beat up the press, he said at his press conference, at his rally, if you beat up the press, don't worry about it, I'll pay your legal fees. This is a tactic of an authoritarian, and in those respects, yes, he had followed their pattern. He had Mein Kampf, like I think it. But he said, that's, I don't know if he's
on the bedside, apparently, allegedly.
Yeah. So don't think that there's any equivalence to their going around doing what they're doing to our saying in factual terms what his actions are in relationship to authoritarians. And Lincoln and what's his name? Hitler did it very legitimately, one law at a time.
Your book is so interesting from many perspectives, including your faith. But one of the things you talk about is, you know, how one of the things that motivated you into public life was believing that in all humans, that each of us has a spark of divinity within us that has to be respected, even the people we dislike. Do you still think Donald J. Trump has that spark of divinity within him?
Yes, but I wish he would respect it. We all have to respect it. In other words, we want people to respect everyone. Our immigrant community, our poor people, our homeless people on the street, as well as everybody we know and our friends, right? A spark of divinity. We have to respect the spark of divinity in ourselves that we have to help people. So my question is not, does he have it? Does he respect it? But let's hope he does. I pray that he does.
And I know prayer and faith are very important to you, and they were important to another woman in your life, your mum, who at one stage wanted you to become a nun. I'm looking forward to a full memoir to find out what her plans were for you in that regard. But look, I know your time with us is very, very limited. So I do want to bring you back home to Ireland, where I know you've huge personal, you know, and family connections, as well as political connections. And, you know, just when you reflect on those connections, who is the most memorable Irish political leader or other person that you have encountered, and how do you think that we have changed in all the time that you have held such strong leadership positions in U.S. politics?
Well, that is, that is a very political question.
It is.
Because I've had the privilege of knowing so many leaders in
Ireland.
Tell
us who's your favorite, Nancy.
Okay, but if I had to say from a personal, political, et cetera, I would have to say, because he just introduced me to so much, was John Hume, John and Pat Hume,
of course.
Both of them. just love them so much. When I was new member of Congress, brand new member of Congress, I was asked to have in our home in San Francisco a reception for John Hume. This is in the late 80s, like 1987. For John Hume, oh my God. John Hume is coming to our home. I met him, but I barely knew him. He came, and it was the first time that the Consul General of UK and the Consul General of Ireland had been to an event of that kind about Ireland. You know, they may have been to City Hall for International Day or something, I don't know. But this is the first time that the Consul General from the UK joined us in our celebration of and our hopes for what could happen in Ireland. It was so thrilling. And again, the relationship that I had with him, I saw Pat. I saw Pat there on a number of different occasions, walk across the bridge arm in arm with her. So from a personal and just official standpoint, I won't even say political because it wasn't political. It was about peace and justice in Ireland. So I would have to name him, although Ireland is very blessed. And now with some women coming up, it's pretty exciting too.
It really, really is. And Nancy's new book,
My Honour,
The Act of Power, is out now from Simon & Schuster. But for now, Speaker Pelosi, we let you go.
I want you to know I have my Kale ring on and I have my three grandsons, Liam, Sean and Ryan. And so we have an ongoing connection to Ireland.
You do, of course. And listen, I've been exhausted just looking at your schedule over the last week. So to have taken time out and to do this, your only Irish interview, I'm really, really, really grateful. And we wish you and Paul and your family all the best and best
of
luck with November. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you.